Welcome to Intrinsically Motivated, where we have conversations with experts in the field of addiction, recovery, and those personally affected by it, as we seek to mobilize the church to replace addiction and mental health challenges with flourishing. I'm Tucker Clements, audio engineer and editor for Uplift Appalachia, and this is Intrinsically Motivated.
So as has kind of become a bit of a tradition on the Intrinsically Motivated podcast up to this point, we're going to end the season with just kind of a recap of everything that's been going on. We had a lot to talk about at the end of last year. We had a lot to talk about at the beginning of this year. And we have, it feels like, so many things going on now that it's hard to keep up with everything that's happening in the Uplift world over here. But when you think back to the last couple of months, how do you summarize it in your brain?
We have prayed and wished and hoped to be able to do some of the things that have been goals all along, and it seems like they have all flooded in at once.
Yeah, to the point that it feels like you're drinking out of a fire hose a lot of the time.
Yes.
And overwhelmed, busy. I mean, those are lots of the things. I mean, good busy. I say this to people a lot. They say, how's it going? I say, I'm great. I'm really busy.
Yes.
Like, we're just always doing whatever the next thing is. And it just kind of feels like, you know, it's so hard to capture. This is the thing that we do because we just have our hands in so many different things right now. And that's great. But
right.
it has been really busy, tiring, exhausting, mentally draining at some points. I mean, we're recording this on the afternoon as we're finishing just a two-day conference, but it's a two-day conference where we've just been so overwhelmed by cool information, lots of great conversations, but it's a lot. My brain hurts right now. So
right.
Some of this is
so
going to be...
So we might as well do a podcast.
So, why
not
go ahead and do a podcast and just talk about everything
right.
else that's been going on in our lives? So just to kind of, I'd kind of like to just go back through a few of the episodes that we've had this season, just kind of recap maybe if there were some big thoughts or anything, and then we'll kind of do just some updates from Uplift and things that we have going forward. We started this season, if you want to call it that, this spring, talking to Dr. Far Curlin from Duke. We were talking to him about medicalizing risk. And I know that we were talking about this before we got started, that a lot of that conversation kind of shaped the way that you think we should talk about even what we're doing.
Right. It's we've talked a lot about the disease model versus more of a flourishing model of how we address addiction. But when he talked about medicalizing risk, it's so much broader. It's like, yes, disease and addiction, but it's like we put this scientific, pseudo-controllable take on things. It's I think that medicalization of risk is sort of a way to try to control risk and to think that we can cure it, think that we can change it, and so forth. But I think that bleeds over into so many things, and it just doubles down on some of this concern we've had about treating addiction as so purely medical, which so many people do right now.
Yeah, and it's just one of those, and I remember getting out of that conversation thinking, he's in a completely different field than we are, and yet he's still kind of coming to some of these same conclusions
right.
in that we need to not blow up the whole system, but we just need to rethink the way we think about people more than anything.
Right.
Because, you know, we'll talk about it in just a little bit when we talk about some of the things we learned at this conference. But one of the things in one of the sessions that I was in was that we can take away people's humanity by turning them into a statistic.
Right.
Or turning them only into a set of symptoms.
Or a member of a group.
Or just a member of a group or whatever it may be. And it's just so much more valuable to see humanity as humanity.
Right.
But that takes a lot more relationship, which is a lot of the things that we've been talking about for years now. And it's not that because we've said it, people are hearing it, but I think people just kind of innately understand it. And it's been encouraging to have lots of conversations through the whole season and just hear about how much people love people,
right.
you know? So that was one of the, I mean, that's what we kicked off with in the spring. There was definitely a theme with a few of our episodes where we really have started delving deeper as an organization into foster care ministry and encouraging churches who are getting involved in that, because foster care ministry so closely ties with everything that we're doing talking about addiction, because addiction and foster care tend to have lots of connections. Actually, two of our board members were the two episodes that we talked to about that. And I just think that it's such a natural connection for us.
Right, because foster care is largely driven by substance use problems. That is the main reason kids are ever taken out of homes. And if we are successful in solving the addiction problem, which is what we've been trying to do, we would not have a foster care problem.
Right. I mean, there would still be instances, but not nearly on the same scale that we're seeing it right now. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then the other key theme, before we get into the what we're really doing, you talked a little bit about deliverance stuff and spiritual warfare and all of that. And I still think that subject is one that, especially in medical circles, you know, kind of the spiritual warfare side of addiction is a conversation that more people are open to. I mean, I would obviously think, I think there's obviously people that see that side of it as well, but it's a piece of the puzzle that we still have to kind of keep our eye on.
Right. And it is so far from that more mechanistic, medical, physical only. It's like the complete opposite end of the spectrum. And so the kind of yes, both is the way to look at it. But I think to leave it out, and that's what I said in the episode, that I think to leave it out is to leave a stone. We don't want to leave any stones unturned, and that is an unturned stone if we don't talk about
it. We want to understand everything. And that kind of goes back to the medicalizing risk and medicalizing all of addiction, and like we can too easily put things in a box and say it's only this, and then we lose out on potentially better chances for people to flourish or better chances for people to find community and connection, all of those sorts of things. Yeah. So we've had a good, I think, really broad set of conversations all season long. But as we've been having those conversations on this podcast, there's been a lot of things, even more things that have just been happening in person. Not the least of which is when we started Uplift, it was to do transportation. We called it Uplift because it sounded a lot like Lyft. But we wanted to see the church giving rides to people in recovery. And starting in January, we finally got to start doing that. I think at the end of the season, in the fall, we said we're about to get started. We're partnering with a couple of organizations to make this happen, and now it's happening.
Right.
And so I think, you know, along with that came, we got to hire Caitlin. She was one of the guests on the podcast. So by now you all have gotten to get to know Caitlin. But we hired her as a transportation coordinator to help us start getting these rides organized and the drivers organized. And I don't think we could exist as an organization at this point without having her in that position, keeping everything going.
And that to me, it's like, I knew her, you knew her better. And we had talked months ago about, I wonder if she would be a good fit for this, but we weren't ready to hire anybody yet. But then when we hired her, it's like we prayed about who to hire, and we're just waiting to see what happened, and things converged, not coincidentally, godly, to hire her. And I cannot imagine a better suited person to the position she is in. It's just like, it wows me every time I interact with her in this and watch her interact with others in this. She is just so suited for what she's doing right now.
And getting into, I mean, she knew kind of what we were doing as we got in, but we didn't know exactly what this was going to look like, because we hired her 2 days before we realized that she had to start scheduling 12 guys transportation from one city to another, you know. Mm-hmm. Big change, and all of a sudden she's throwing herself in, but also she's helping us figure out how are we going to make this work, what's it going to look like, and it really has kind of changed the way that we even approach equipping people in the church to give people rides.
Right.
And I think that's been one of the coolest things that we've had happen. And a lot of that has been, instead of saying, you need to go through this kind of group training or you need to watch these videos, we can still do those things. We still want to do those things.
We still have those things.
We still have every single one of those things. But one of the things that we've been doing since then that's been way more effective is just saying, hey, I'm going to be driving about 5 or 6 guys on Tuesday. Come ride with me. And having somebody hop in a car, hop in a van, whatever it looks like, and just ride with us while we pick up these guys and start to get to know them. Because I know I've been in the car several times. I have lots of close people to me that have been in the car several times. And these guys have gotten to know us. They're starting to build relationships with us. Caitlin has had folks riding with her hop in the truck with her. She's driving, and they've started driving as well. And it's just been really encouraging to see that once if you just get in the car, just right. get in the car and go for a ride, you realize just how approachable this form of ministry is, but how amazing an opportunity to start building relationships with these guys it has been.
Right. And even the thinking of it's like on the job training sort of thing, but when somebody rides with you, you're on the way to pick people up and you can have a chat with them about here is our model and here is how we're thinking about doing this and this is what you might see. And so you're training, but it matters because in 5 minutes or 2 minutes, the guys are going to get in the car. And so they get in the car, you have the ride, and then you've got to go back afterwards and you can say, what was that like? And it's like you can immediately debrief, and that's a much more personal and applied and meaningful way to train people, which is so funny because we talk about the riding in a car together being such a good way to get to know someone, but it's also a great way to train your drivers.
It's been an amazing way to get to know the people that are going to ride with us, because there have been folks, I mean, even in my church that have volunteered that a few of them I knew, a few of them I didn't know very well. And then I had 20, 30 minutes to get to know them. And by the end of it, it's like, okay, I know you really well now, and you know me because I don't shut up the whole time that I'm in the car. I'm going to fill the space with some sort of conversation, and it's been great. And getting to just start to see and to then know, and I think this has been kind of your perspective on this, because, you know, we hired a transportation coordinator, and then she started coordinating transportation, and you haven't been as involved. So there's a lot of weeks where you're like, I am amazed that things are happening. And I'm even getting to that place now where it's like, I've had a few guys ride with me, and then I'll find out a few weeks later, oh yeah, they've been driving 2 times a week, every week for the last 3 weeks. It's like, oh, that's amazing. Right. And the fact that it's happening a little bit more organically, the church is kind of starting to take over and right. do it right. is encouraging. But we still obviously need more people to do it, because we have lots of guys, lots of opportunities. It's more that I see it as lots of opportunities.
Right.
But until we can get the church to do it, you know, we're going to feel stretched thin. And I think that's not what we want. We want people to feel like we're not asking a ton. We want you right. to drive maybe once or twice every 2 or 3 weeks would be the ideal. But to do that, we're going to need a lot of people that are excited to drive.
Right.
And don't think that there's not reward in this too, because I'm going to keep going back to Caitlin, because she's been driving the same group of guys for, you know, a few months. And then all of a sudden she said, hey, our church has dinner on Wednesday night. You want to come? And they said, yeah.
So it's been super easy, really talking with these guys. And so the more that you see them, the more that you're like, okay, hey, what's up, Joe Schmo? How's it going? And so there's, you know, a lot of like back and forth conversations going on, or, you know, joking or whatever that looks like. But we really built connections. I've probably built a lot, like, really great connections with at least like 5, 6 of these guys. Really, we started having conversations about Jesus that just came up naturally. There was no like shove or push about Jesus on them. They just heard that I was in the worship team and they started having questions about that. And so really sparked like, hey, where do you go to church? What does that look like? And so I was like, why don't you come to church with me? And so the first Wednesday that we went, I had, I think, 8 guys come. And I know some of them were probably there just like, hey, free food. But the really cool thing that happened is that I could just see like Jesus moving in the space, just like with the people at church, just being like, hey, like, welcome. We're so glad you're here. And so one of the conversations that happened, really, I could see one of the guys just kind of having a hard time. He looked a little anxious. And so I just went up to him and asked, hey, you know, you okay? What's going on? And so he just let me know. He's like, hey, I'm just feeling a little anxious, just from like history that he has. Groups, loud environments just kind of make him anxious. But I could tell that he was getting a little teary-eyed, like there was more to the story. And he told me, he was like, I really have never felt this type of love before. Which really just broke my heart, but like in the best way, because we as a church, but not only we as a church, but like Jesus just really like wrapped his arms around that guy in that moment, was like, hey man, like you are loved, like you are doing the things that you need to do to like better yourself. So that was really cool. And then literally in like the next day or 2 days after. That was on a Wednesday night. They came on a Sunday morning. Really loved this. Most of the same guys came on the Sunday morning. One of them I was texting with, and he has been looking to like get a job. What does that look like? A lot of the guys are working to get jobs. And so we were just kind of texting back and forth, and he was like, I really feel like I can see God moving in my life for the first time. And I was like, man, like if that doesn't just like get you fired up for like what this could be for you and your church, or as a volunteer, like I don't know really what would get you fired up, because it gets me fired up every time I get those guys.
So that's what's going on in transportation world. We're really excited to see that keep going. Other just kind of organizational big updates, the big change that I've been really excited about was I finally am now the executive director for Uplift, which,
congratulations.
Thank you so much. I convinced you to hire me after right. after all these years.
After thinking up the whole organization.
But you know, years it's ago. Like it was one of those, we now have the resources and the need and right. it's time. It was the right time, and since I've gotten to be in this now full time, this is what I'm doing. I'm not contracting other things off to the side. I'm really all in. It's been all in, and I think that's been great, because it's just been, you know, to stick with our driving theme, pedal to the metal the whole time since right. we've gotten in, and it just keeps going, and that's very exciting. And a lot of that has been, you know, finally getting to get into new locations to do new training things. We have had lots of new training opportunities. One of the most unique that we've had, and I know this was a connection that you made first, so I'll let you talk a little bit about it, but we've got to teach a class now.
Right. We have had a relationship with Tri-State Bible College in South Point, Ohio, for a little over a year. We did a training for them last year, but the president, Rex Howe, is the president, and he is very passionate about anyone in ministry being trained about trauma and past trauma and the effects of past trauma and also addiction, and feels that that's a really weak area in training for folks in ministry. And so being the president of a Bible college, he has some say about what their college does. And so they have invited us to teach a class, and we're doing a class called Trauma-Informed Counseling, which really is more trauma-informed ministry. It would apply to anything. And so it's using those principles in ministry settings. And that has been just great to put it into an academic format.
We've been teaching trauma-informed care in some form for years now, but just to all of a sudden be able to think about, if we had 15 weeks and we could really stretch it out. And to me, the assignments for the course that we ended up coming up with, I love. Like, yes. I love the opportunity to discuss what you end up thinking about as you're doing the assignments. And I'm not going to spoil any of them, because I hope that every single person who's here will know you can take these courses online, and we want you to sign up, and you want us to teach you for 15 weeks on trauma-informed counseling or trauma-informed ministry. It applies. And I don't know when it will be offered again next, but whenever it is, make sure you, if you are interested in going a little bit deeper, even than our 2-hour training, It's been really cool just to kind of see what that course became. And, you know, we didn't even set out to make a hard course. We set out to make a really practical course. And I right. think that that's a lot of what we're getting out of it, is just some really good practical conversation. And it's been really rewarding. But outside of that, you know, we've always hoped to connect the church with other organizations. And we've had some kind of unique opportunities. We did trauma-informed care at a barber school.
Yep.
That was really interesting. We did that over the course of 2 different sessions on 2 different weeks. And just to kind of get to introduce that to people who interact with people every day in a new context was, I think for me, it was really helpful just to kind of think about what we're teaching in a new way.
Right.
Because it's a new audience that we've never kind of communicated this kind
of
thing.
And also it's a way to reach some people that might be quite unreachable through, say, helping professions or even the church. One of the places, you know, people talk about, somebody will talk to a bartender, well, they'll talk to a hairdresser, you know, that somebody that's doing their hair, you're sitting there, you're having a conversation. And so to equip the folks that are going to be cutting someone's hair to be attuned to this and maybe be able to speak helpful things to them, or at least treat them in a way that is helpful to them.
Yeah, it's just, again, these principles apply everywhere. These are true everywhere. And whether we're specifically teaching them from the biblical perspective, we're infusing biblical truth into wherever it is we're getting to take it. It's been really rewarding. I think it's been really cool.
And that is one of the things that one of the grants that's funding us is to do this cross-training from the faith perspective and also the community perspective. But within the community trainings we do, we train people about the faith piece that we're teaching so that language is shared. And so even in a non-faith setting, they're hearing how the faith community is learning it.
Right. Yep. And that's so cool because it leads to, again, it sets up potential interesting gospel-centered conversations even after that sometimes. Right. And that's been really cool. We've done trainings for foster care organizations, the Kingsport Alliance for Continued Learning. What were they? You went and did that one without me.
I did that one without you, yep. There's a group of mostly retired people that just love to keep learning. And so they have... I don't even know what all topics they have, but when there's something of interest, they have someone come in. It's a two-hour course, just like you're doing a class, and they take notes and they ask questions. And so I was asked to do that. Somebody had been to one of our trainings, and she really wanted to share it with her friends. And so it was nicely attended, and so they just occasionally have folks in to come, and I was able to go teach them.
And so every walk of life, and I think because it's mostly retired folks
right.
in that group,
right.
and I think one of the things that we've kind of tongue-in-cheek said, but we actually mean it, is especially for this transportation ministry, if you're retired and you're hearing this and you're just looking for something to do with your time, if your husband is retired and he can either sit around the house and you want to get rid of him, this would be a perfect opportunity
right.
for him to get out and go drive around and talk to some guys as he takes them to their job training or something like that.
Right.
But again, any of this is for everybody. I mean, we've gotten to do trainings in churches. We still hope to do more trainings in churches. And I think that has been the one place where we're still praying that God will show us where those next few churches are going to be, because we still think it's good to understand trauma-informed care, but it's even better if the whole church understands
right.
it together so that they can apply the things that they learn to everybody's ministry. And so... still looking for more and more of those opportunities. But every time we do the training, I don't know how many times we've done this version of the trauma-informed church training, but every single time I get excited about the content every time. I never get tired of talking about it. And I just love that I get to see people get it for
right.
the first time. And that's just always so cool for me, because I remember what that was like for me when I first went through that training. That's a lot of our training stuff that's been going around. We've made lots of different unique connections. There's been some pastors groups in Unicoi County that we've met with. We reconnected with one of our pastor friends, Lisa Bryant, who had an episode come out this semester. Wow.
I
am teaching a college class now. Man. Who we reconnected, and you heard a little bit of her story on the podcast earlier this season. And that's been really encouraging as well. But also we've been able to get involved with some of the long-term recovery groups in different counties around the area. And I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about
sure.
what that's been.
Yeah. Last season we probably talked some about Hurricane Helene. Well, at the beginning of this season.
The very beginning we were talking about Helene.
Episode talked about Helene. And because it wasn't, you know, one and done, everything's fixed. It's a long-term effort to rebuild and recoup after such a natural disaster. And so in each county in Tennessee, at least the way it's set up, there's a long-term recovery group. And so we talk recovery and we think addiction, but this is recovery from natural disaster. And so we've been able to attend those. And some of the things that are interesting, particularly one of them, they have navigators that help people find the resources that they need and make the connections to FEMA or funding or whatever, find supplies and things like that. But they had met most of the acute needs. But what they saw as they were walking with people is they have regular ongoing needs, like they're struggling with substance use issues and they're struggling with, you know, family upheavals and such. And so hindsight, we wish that these people who are now walking with folks had some of the equipping that we're trying to do. It's like, you know, we're saying, please get equipped because you're going to need it. And now they're thinking, oh, we needed that.
We really did need it.
We really did need that.
Yeah, and now it's also, I mean, and I don't mean this in like the never let a disaster go to waste kind of thing, but I mean, I do think not to silver line, because I don't, it was tragic. But at the same time, it again is helping us realize these are the things that we need to know, and that there is more work to do beyond specifically this disaster. And
I think it's showing other people. It's like it's uncovered some things that people were not aware of, but they've gone places they weren't going, and now they've been there, and now they're seeing it. It's like, oh, wait, we need something more. And so it does give an opportunity because of that. Because you really, in a disaster, you get to see into people's lives. I mean, you're cleaning out their basement. I did some of that. It's like, you're seeing what they collected, you know? It's
right.
Very intimate.
Yeah, and that I think that kind of talking about that sort of disaster relief kind of transitions us really well into the last main thing I want to talk about today, which is kind of recapping this conference that we're just about to leave right now, which is the Conference on Medicine and Religion, which you found years ago.
Right.
And have been talking to me about it for years and years. You would love this. And then I started going, starting last year, and every time I've gone, it's like, no, this is great. And they're talking about the same things that we're talking about. And the whole purpose is to kind of connect theologians and the medical professions all together to kind of talk about common themes in their work or their ministry or just kind of how we can improve what it is that we're doing in both realms. So you have pastors and you have Bible college professors and you have psychiatrists and you have nurses and you have us, nonprofit professors and focused on addiction and these sorts of things as well. But this year, and I think last year as well, I don't know if they're intentionally doing it or if it's just that really is where the world is, but the themes keep really perfectly focusing on things that we care about.
Right.
And so this year's theme was people in the margins. And so we actually got to, as Uplift, present three different things in three different contexts. I had one, you presented one with me, and then you also would have presented one with one of your colleagues from ETSU, but she wasn't able to come, so you presented it by yourself.
Right.
But I want to just kind of break down what those things that we were talking about were, and then anything that was interesting that you've kind of picked up on overarching themes from the conference. But let's start with, so my presentation, I was talking about this idea of flourishing. One of the things that we always say when we're talking about Uplift is that we're helping people with addiction and mental health challenges find lives of flourishing. And we think that the church is the way that we're going to do that. And that really was as straightforward as my presentation really was. I was using the Gospel of John to talk about how Jesus, you know, says that he came that we would have life, but life abundant, more. He had something more for us than even what we would expect. And even in John chapter 6, when he had just fed 5,000 people and the people followed him the next day, and he said, you're just coming back looking for a meal, but I have something better for you. There's something more. And I was connecting that to the way that we sometimes approach addiction and recovery when we look at it kind of from the medical side, or specifically more the public health side, where we try to, again, we kind of talked about this earlier, turn people into either statistics or symptoms and treat just those in kind of the simplest way. Because we want to make, and I was saying, we make something that's easily replicable, something that's cost effective often, and something that can reach the most people. The problem is, to be able to do all of those things, the results are going to be kind of the lowest level of expectation, which when we're talking about addiction means fewer people are dying, which
is wonderful.
Is a good thing. We don't want people to die, but what I'm trying to argue and what I think we have been trying to argue for several years now, sometimes louder and sometimes a little bit more obnoxiously, is that there's more than just keeping people alive, and there's more than just making sure that the statistics look good, because there's still innate humanity in each individual, and we want each individual to flourish, but that takes a lot of work, and that's going to take the church. And that's been kind of the argument that we've been making for a while, but that was the argument that I got to make here, and I thought it was met with a lot of great response. There were a lot of people that were very encouraging of that, a lot of people asking, you know, how do you do that? And I said, we're still working on that too. Or how do you get the church to want to do that? I'm like, we're still working on that too. If you have any suggestions, please let us know. But I think I think it was really good for me. I had a little bit of imposter syndrome. I've said this before, because it's like, I have one degree. I don't have all of these letters after my name that a lot of these people do. And there are a bunch of really smart people at this conference. There are some geniuses that do all sorts of amazing things. And here I am talking about, you know, my John chapter 6 and my John chapter 10. But I think the simplicity of the message is what makes it sometimes even more frustrating when you present it to say, really, is this easy, guys? Like, let's just do what the Bible says.
Let's do it.
but it was really encouraging. And then we got to share a little bit, again, going back to Helene, if you want to talk a little bit about some of what that was about in as much detail as you feel like giving, you can.
Right. Well, one of the things that we did is the paper that we talked through contrasted the church's response to Helene and the church's response to the crisis of addiction. And again, Helene was horrific. People died, lost all kinds of things. But the church did a great job of mobilizing quickly and just universally. People from everywhere were diving in to address the needs and care for the people, which is amazing. But we have found that it's been much more difficult to mobilize the church around addiction. And so we tried to analyze maybe what was going on there. And if you want to pop through your main points of that, because I think it was pretty succinct.
Yeah, I've got 3 points. It was, and if you want to hear me talk about them more, the very first episode this season was me kind of ranting on this very thing. But it's that the hurricane was tangible. You could see what it was. You could see that the tree fell down. It was temporary in that you would know when the tree had been removed, and that the people who were victims of the hurricane didn't do this to themselves. No one asked for the tree to fall in front of their house or on top of their house. And how that mentality sometimes is not the way that people think about people living with addiction. And again, there is certainly individual responsibility for actions being taken, and we made that point. But at the same time, we also talk about trauma-informed care and how different adversity in life, particularly when we're young, can lead to a higher likelihood of ending up in these situations. And so not to absolve people of guilt or anything, but the fact that people end up there does not make them less human.
Right.
And I think one of the things that you said in that talk really, I think, drives the point home when it's people that have suffered a natural disaster and people that are struggling with addiction are both struggling with the same things.
Very similar, yeah.
The symptoms are the same. Maybe they don't have a house. Maybe they don't have food. Maybe they don't have human connection and people.
Right.
And all of those things require the same type of response. Now, one is going to perhaps be more ongoing and long-term, and one's going to be a little bit more bumpy along the way, and there's going to be a lot more learning, but there's a lot of learning in disaster relief too.
Right.
You don't know what you're getting into when you get there sometimes. And so I think the biggest take home for me from that is the church's response has been amazing with the hurricane. Let's keep going.
Right. Let's use that. Now you've seen it.
And now you know the people that were affected, and those are still the people that we want you to go build your life around so that we can help support them and love them along the way.
Right.
And then the last one was, again, kind of going back to us stepping back and saying, we think we know how to connect people to the church and connect the church to people. But in some of the cities that in some of the towns, in some of the villages, the small areas, especially in Southwest Virginia that we have visited, worked with, those kind of things haven't worked. And so you got to talk a little bit about a new approach that you've been taking and just tell me a little bit about that approach.
Sure. So just like we have, I mean, from Johnson City and the larger towns around, we've had some challenges trying to get the church mobilized or even get a foot in the door. It's been at least as difficult, if not more so, in some of the very small communities, rural communities. And we've done a good bit of work in Southwest Virginia trying to make connections to the churches there and so forth. and we had a couple of towns. One particularly that we had really worked with an addiction treatment center, worked with a church, and so forth. And still, it's just like we're just not getting any traction. And so Mary Jo Hedrick, who works at the Strong Brain Institute with me, we decided let's just pitch we've done the surveys, we've tried to do focus groups, all these sort of, you know, the usual methods to do research or whatever to make connections. Let's just go visit. And so we went and, you know, started at the diner and had breakfast and talked with people at the diner and said, well, who should we talk to in town? This is what we're here doing. And went to the next place and the next place and got referrals from people, because a lot of the barriers to, say, public health folks coming in and telling a small town what they should do or telling a church what to do is this distrust of outsiders. And so we were trying to undo our outsiderness and become more insiders, I guess. And so we were able to really have some good conversations with folks, and it was well accepted. We did that in one town, and then we tried the exact same thing in another town. We found different places that were our connection points, but just going kind of humbly with no agenda, no preconceived notion, and just saying, we're just trying to find out because we care about your town. And so it's just like with the driving, you know, come get in the car with me and let's just talk and go together. I'm going to come, I'm going to eat here. Let's just talk and we'll go together to the next place. It seems to be so simple, but more effective than all of the fancy stuff.
So those were our papers at the conference here. But there was lots of discussion, again, very close to a lot of the things that we were saying. I think there were several sessions where we could not make it to every session that we wish we could, because so many people were talking about things, either it being trauma or addiction or community, lot of human connection, which I think is good. Now, there are a lot of conversations that are still very focused on the clinical side, because these are doctors talking to doctors, or medical students talking to doctors and medical students and saying, how can we make our jobs more effective, which is still important. The piece that I still feel like is kind of missing in this conversation, except for us, not to say that we're the only ones talking about it, but sometimes it feels like we're the representation of just the church trying to get into this space as well, is still that last step of, but how do we get the church to want to be a part of this as well? And I think that's been kind of one of my big take homes from this, is that we get it. We're learning things. We're getting better. We're understanding trauma and addiction and these sorts of things, but there's still a little bit more language that we can add that I think will make this even that much more effective. Have there been any big take homes for you that you've really kind of dwelt on or seen or thought about?
Well, so here, a couple of sessions, there were two different sessions that I think were pivotally meaningful in different ways. One of them was the rhyming one, Nourishing Flourishing. it was all about intentionally having meals with whatever group that you want to get connected with. And some people talked about, you know, living together in a house and having meals. Others went to some, you know, they had a group meeting and they always had a meal, whatever. And we started back when we had our church plant, that was one of our non-negotiables, was having those meals together. So I think that is a thing, you know, and we talked about meals or writing or whatever as ways to create community. And so I think that is yet another way. And it might be a person going to lunch with a person, or it might be having some sort of community meal and bringing people in that might not normally feel invited. You know, the whole wedding feast idea and scripture and so forth. So that one was very, very important. And then I went to one this morning where, and it's the same things that I think about this whole, it's just a disease, your body is broken, and it needs to be fixed by smart medical people, which we talk about all the time. But the fellow was talking about the fact that removes a person's agency, their ability to do anything. If you take away, if you give them, and this is a thing that we even when we teach trauma-informed care, that we run the risk of, oh, you're not holding them accountable for anything. It's like, oh, you're just excusing everything. And we say, no, that is not what we're doing. It might be reasons, but it's not an excuse. But he was saying, even in that, he was talking about physicians who say, oh, well, you were raised in this neighborhood and you don't have, you know, food in your area, and giving the person all of these excuses for why their health was what it was. But by doing that, while they're trying to reduce, say, the stigma or guilt or shame, you're taking away their ability to think about controlling it.
You're telling them there's not a way for you to make it better.
Right. It's not your fault, so you can't fix it.
It's not your fault, but also you can't do anything. Yeah.
Right. And that to me was just like a brain explode moment.
Yeah. Again, going back, if we're coming up with all these symptoms and reasons and statistics as to why things are the way they are, and we're removing the humanity.
Right.
When
we are responsible to God, you know, and so when your doctor says, oh, no, you're not. Yeah, you are.
Yeah, that's a big thought.
Isn't it?
Yeah. I wasn't in either of those two sessions
right.
that you went to.
Right.
I was in a lot of really good ones, but
yep.
I wasn't in either of those two.
Yep.
It's a shame. That's what we get for trying to divide and conquer sometimes.
That's right.
One of
you
us.
You miss some good stuff.
You miss some good stuff too. So before we get off of here, just a little talk about what's coming up next. This is going to be our last episode for the spring. We're going to take a break on episodes through the summer. We may have a little special episode that's going to come out sometime during the summer that I'm really excited about. I'm not going to give anything away, but it may be kind of a multi-part episode talking about a little bit about why we are who we are now. So be on the lookout for that coming up sometime during the summer. We'll make sure that we blast that everywhere so that you can find it, because I think that'll be a really good little mini series that we can put out as kind of a palate cleanser while you're waiting, you know, patiently for even more amazing episodes to start back this fall. But what do you have that you're most looking forward to coming up in the near future?
One of the things that we both feel the need to do is get some things written.
Yeah.
Is get some things written.
Yeah. It was funny. We were at a breakfast table this morning talking with the author of a book about writing, and somebody, one of the nice little med students or
undergrad
yeah. students was asking, how do you know when you're supposed to write something? And I loved your answer, which was
when you need to say something so badly, you can't help writing it. You have to write it.
And I think that's kind of where we both are right now. There's a couple of things that we just have to get out of our head onto paper and out to where people can read it. So maybe that we don't know exactly what form that will take. Maybe some of that will be published articles. Maybe some of that will be more book format. But there's just a lot of things that we're learning and seeing happening that I think we're going to be doing a lot of writing. So we'll hopefully have things to report on, or things that you'll have already read by the time you get back to this next episode. A lot more driving.
One other thing that I think of is I've gotten a chance to, and I can't remember if I've said this anywhere on this, but one of the things I've gotten a chance to do recently is I'm working with a group that tries to get people who understand science and research findings to help legislators understand what they need to know as they're making legislation. And this, they anybody all over the country can access this. It's based at Penn State, but I've gotten a chance to talk with North Carolina legislators. I've met with a couple of them once, and then I'm going again in a week or so. But as they have, and it particularly has been the faith response to addiction is what I keep getting called in on. And so,
and it's just education. It's not
it
even
is.
Trying to convince them to
no,
do anything.
No, it's just, this is what we know. This is what is available. This is what's been done. This is what hasn't. And so just the it's humbling and such an honor to be able to do that, but it's very helpful to them as well, because they can't study everything. And so to have somebody that is sort of coordinating all of this, and then you've got various scientists and researchers that are talking this out in like a listserv, and then it gets boiled down to some content that then can be presented in a digestible way to legislators as they're developing legislation and voting on legislation.
That's going to be really interesting. I'm interested to see, after they come out of these kinds of training things, what legislation they start to propose,
right.
and if that changes.
Right.
So a lot more riding, a lot more training, a lot more driving. So I'm just going to reiterate again, and for Caitlin's sake, if you think that's something you might want to do, let me know. Like, let us know. Like, reach out to us, website.
No commitment.
Social media. No commitment. But just talk to us about what it could look like, and we will plug you in. We will take you with us. We will gently place you in the passenger seat of a car, and we will gently drive you around the Tri-Cities and let you meet some of these awesome guys. Or we can, if you're just interested in driving, maybe it's like, this isn't the right application. We want to partner with other organizations. Anybody can get involved.
Right. And we do have some young moms as well.
Yep.
That
so
if there are people that it's like, well, I can't drive guys, but there's some young moms that it would be so helpful to them to get their child to a doctor's appointment.
Lots of that. So lots of training, lots of riding, lots of driving. And then just kind of jumping off of what you were talking about with going to some of these towns in Southwest Virginia, I'll kind of close us off here, is going to be a lot of food and coffee.
Yes.
Lots of sitting down, sharing a meal, which is the heart that led us to plant a church now 12 years ago, 12 and a half years ago, almost 13 years ago. You know, it was just this desire to be with each other all the time. And it was this truth that we were rediscovering and now applying in a new way that came from Acts chapter 2, where it talks about the young church being all together, having all things in common, breaking bread daily, praying together, and God adding to their numbers day by day those who were being saved. And so I think if we can keep being in the lives of the church as we pull them along with us and take them on into ministry opportunities alongside us, or if we can have a meal with somebody who's in recovery as we were giving them a ride, and then we take them back to the church and they have, you know, dinner at the church with us, and then we give them a ride home and we build a relationship with them that way. The more and more we can just be together with people is going to be an amazing opportunity for us, especially as the church, because the quote that I keep coming back to, I've used it for a long time. It's been famously said, it was Johann Hari, who's not a Christian, but said, the opposite of addiction isn't sobriety, it's human connection, which is absolutely reflected in the way that God created us. So as you are listening to this, hopefully you are reminded of just how powerful being together is. And that's what I love about this podcast as much as anything, is because I get to sit here and connect with people as I have this conversation. And you're getting to hear people's stories and connecting with the truth in their stories. And so hopefully we can continue to keep this momentum going of being together, being in each other's lives, and really making a difference as we help people move from mental health challenges and addiction and toward lives of flourishing.
This has been a podcast powered by Uplift Appalachia. To learn more, you can find us at upliftappalachia.org.